ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
If you're married and have had children, you know how challenging it can be to be both a good partner and a good caregiver to your kids. Now imagine having to do that parenting on your own. Well, that's the norm for many in America today, where 40% of the babies in the United States are born to unwed parents. On this edition of UWM Today, we're going to talk to a UWM researcher who's been studying ways of getting fathers more involved in raising their children. Paul Florsheim is a professor of community and behavioral health promotion in UWM's Zilber School of Public Health. He's also co-author of a new book just coming out. It's called Lost and Found: Young Fathers in the Age of Unwed Parenthood. Welcome, Paul. Good to have you on the program with us today.
Good to be here.
I have to tell you, I was surprised when I saw that number. 40% of children born today are to unwed parents. That seems remarkably high.
And actually, the number is much higher if you look at the younger age group. So under, for parents who are having children under the age of 25, it's closer to 7 to 8%. I mean, 7 to 8 out of 10.
That's shocking.
Yeah, and then when you take into consideration that many marriages end in divorce, I mean, there's a lot of unwed parents out there. So,
what's the impact on society?
Well, I mean, the impact varies depending. I mean, there are plenty of unwed parents who do well as either in a relationship and unwed and or no longer in a relationship, but working to make it work as parents, but it's often the case that fathers have a harder time staying connected, and particularly young fathers, when the relationship sort of gets difficult, when it becomes strained, when there's conflict in the relationship, when they aren't functioning as well as fathers or as they should, as they think they should be as fathers, that can have an impact on their connection to their child, their connection to their partner. And, you know, generally speaking, two parents are better than one. It doesn't, you know, not necessarily, you know, a mother and a father, but two parents are generally better than one because parenting is challenging, as you suggested in your intro.
So in these situations where you have two people who have a child, they're not married, does it make a big difference whether or not they're living together and not married or apart in terms of the impact on the child itself?
So it does. I mean, the research, it's interesting because the research suggests that marriage, being married in terms of its impact on the child, sort of the stability that you're able to create for the child, sort of having a secure, stable home, married is better than unmarried. Co-residential is better than non-co-residential. But that said, you know, there are plenty of exceptions to those rules, and meaning that if the relationship is a positive relationship and the couple is either not in a marital relationship anymore or not cohabiting anymore, that matters a lot if the relationship can be positive. And in addition to there being exceptions to the rules are changing. Our society is changing because marriage is kind of less cohesive than it once was, less attractive to many couples than it once was. So we don't really know at this point sort of where we're heading with respect to what the architecture of the family looks like.
So your research is designed to try to get the answer to that question, right, in terms of where the father fits in all of this.
Yeah, that's a huge part of the research, just trying to understand the experiences of these young couples as they transition to parenthood in a less stable situation than is typically or was typically the case when, you know, when I was born or my parents were born. Part of it is just trying to understand the situation. And, you know, over time, you know, we got more and more interested in what can we do to help these young couples stabilize their lives.
You mentioned we, and we should have mentioned to our listeners that your co-author, your fellow author on this project was David Moore, who I understand was once one of your students.
Yeah. He was a student of mine many years ago. Now he's a professor at another university, University of Puget Sound. And he was played a really important role in the beginning of this research when we first got going. And there are many. And when I say we, I mean Dave, of course, but I also mean, you know, my other colleagues and my other students who did this. This was not a one-person operation. This was really a team effort.
So tell us about the research. How did you go about trying to figure out the dynamics of these relationships where there are children but no marriage? You went out and actually talk to them, right? Talk to dads and to moms.
Yeah. So I got interested in this research, really, or this question of fathers and fatherhood when I was a graduate student still, and I was in Chicago. I went to graduate school in Chicago and working on a project that was studying. I was working for a couple of researchers that were studying boys who are at risk for juvenile delinquency and their families. And my job was to videotape and code, sort of oversee the coding, working with a number of graduate students of these families. And what, you know, was really clear to me immediately was that, you know, the dynamics between families with and without a father were quite different. And I got interested in this question of, you know, where are these fathers who are not there, and what's their story? And that was really reinforced by the clinical work that I was doing as well. I was in school to be a clinical psychologist. I am a clinical psychologist as well as a professor of public health. And similarly, you know, I was working with a number of families where the father was not present and or peripherally present, you know, sort of on the edges and seemingly wanting to be involved but not necessarily knowing how to be involved. And I got interested in that question of, you know, what happens to these fathers when they disengage? Why do they disengage? What's the story behind that? So I really wanted to go back and try to identify fathers, you know, before that happened and follow them over time. I got interested and decided that I was going to study expectant fathers, fathers who were, you know, about to have a child, but the child wasn't there yet.
Any commonalities as you talk to these soon-to-be young dads?
You know, one of the things, I mean, yes and no. One of the things that we really try to convey in this book is the incredible diversity of fathers and the surprises that we noted in how their stories unfolded over time. But I do think that there are some sort of common themes that we and others, I mean, other people have noted these themes too, and that is that the relationship between the father and the mother, the expectant father and the expectant mother, is vital to how the transition to parenthood unfolds. That those who have a reasonable relationship, even if they're not together as a couple anymore, even if they, you know, are not married, that is tremendously powerful as a predictor of how that relationship will unfold over time and how connected that father will be with his child.
Who's more in control here in terms of deciding whether or not the father will have a relationship or not have a relationship with a child? Is it the dad saying, look, I want in, and the mom saying, I'm not sure I want you around anymore? Or is it the dad not knowing how to make that request, how to figure out how they can continue to be involved in the lives of the children that they're bringing into the world?
Really good question. And The answer is both, and to some extent, the answer is how that negotiation goes over time. So that's why we are so interested in the relationship. That you know, sometimes it is that the father. I mean, let me back up a little bit. That one of the things that struck us really quickly was when you're talking to expectant fathers. Really, almost all the fathers that we talked to, even if they were nervous and scared and unsure about whether they were going to be able to manage this, wanted to be good fathers. I think that that's an almost universal trend. That when you know when they find out that they're going to have a baby and the baby's coming, they want to be good fathers. What happens sometimes is that. Fathers don't feel as though they can manage the expectations of being a father, and there's shame involved in that. Either, and it may be because you know they have substance use issues, it may be that they have problems managing their anger, it may be that they once the conflict between them and their partner emerges, if some conflict emerges, that they don't have the interpersonal skills to manage that conflict, and so they do. Many fathers disengage. Because they just don't know how to manage the challenges. Many stay together. I mean, I don't want to sort of paint a portrait that's too dark here because many of the fathers do function pretty well. We were surprised by that. But it's also the case that, you know, sometimes young moms decide that, you know, this guy's bad news for whatever reason. And you know, our response to that, I mean, we are advocating for father engagement, but not at any cost. I mean, sometimes these fathers have such tremendous challenges, either challenges managing their anger, challenges with substance use, that they can't really function as fathers. That doesn't mean we should write them off. I think it means that they need help. Prior to their you know sort of getting reconnected. So sometimes the mothers make the decision, and sometimes it's a difficult but not necessarily a bad decision.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio today is Paul Florsheim. Paul's a professor of community and behavioral health promotion at the Zilber School of Public Health at UWM, which, by the way, is the only accredited school of public health here in the state of Wisconsin, something we're all very, very proud of. We're talking about a new book that Paul has just co-authored called Lost and Found, Young Fathers in the Age of Unwed Parenthood. Paul, could you tell us a story or two of some of the young fathers that you've met along the way in doing this book who have stories that would help us better understand the challenges that these dads have as they try to figure out their place in the dynamics of a relationship where there is going to be a baby?
Yeah, you know, what? One of the things in the beginning of the book, you know, I talk about some sort of aha moments that we had that really sort of stuck with us throughout the work. And one of the aha moments was it was not uncommon for us to interview a father, and at the end of the interview, you know, kind of talk to ourselves or talk to each other and say, you know, this just looks like it's heading in a bad direction. That this is, you know, that this young man is not equipped to function well as a father. And, you know, what was this young woman thinking when she got together with this guy? And that wasn't the aha moment. The aha moment was, you know, 2 years later when we re-interviewed him. And, you know, I mean, let's say, I mean, I'll give some examples. I mean, that, you know, fathers who had dropped out of school or were kicked out of school for fighting, you know, didn't have jobs, were dealing drugs, were, you know, getting into trouble with the police, you know, all of the things that, you know, we sometimes think about when we think about, you know, sort of troubled young men, you know, 2 years later, you know, much to our surprise, they're doing pretty well as fathers. And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're backed, like sometimes they're not together with the couple. So we introduced one young father early on in the book, Darnell, who was was that type of better than expected father is what we ended up calling them, is that they really ended up doing much better than we could have anticipated. You know, and of course we thought we were pretty good at predicting, and we thought, you know, what was this young woman thinking? But the, you know, perhaps this young woman, in Darnell's case, that we call his partner Cleo, saw something in him that we couldn't see. And it took a while for that to emerge, but it did, in fact, emerge.
So does counseling help? I mean, you're a clinical psychologist. You were doing research to write this book. Is it your sense, after having talked to many young people in this situation, that an intervention could make people better parents than you ever imagined possible?
Yeah. So when I started doing this research, I wasn't completely setting out to develop an intervention, but I am a clinical psychologist, and that is sort of the way my mind works. So so Darnell is a good example of this. So we, you know, having met quite a number of fathers like Darnell, we felt as though we could really learn something from these stories. Something happened between Darnell and Cleo that made it possible for them to co-parent successfully. They were getting along when their child was two. After he had been to jail and out of jail, I think two or three times, and decided, you know, I want to do better than this. And she was able to support him in that endeavor, even though she had moved on and was in a different relationship. And we thought, boy, these are amazing stories. Like, what's going on here? How can we figure out how to help other young men, young couples in this position? So we did develop an intervention, a program that we call the Young Parenthood Program, that is intended to help expectant fathers and their partners develop communication skills, really. It's really a communication skills program, so that they're able to continue to work together regardless of what happens to their romantic relationship. If they stay together, that's great. If they decide not to, one or the other, that they're able to manage that relationship so that they can function well as fathers.
So you talk about communication. It's a two-way street. Does that mean that there's counseling for both the dad and the mom simultaneously?
Yes. I mean, we designed the program to be just that, to work with couple by couple, because we really felt as though you can counsel moms or dads alone, but really help working with them together. I mean, this is a family, couples, counseling sort of perspective. Working with them together sort of as a coach to some extent, a communications coach, is the most effective, most efficient way to help them listen to each other differently, speak to each other differently, and kind of learn to sort of support each other, diminish stress rather than increase stress, manage conflict rather than have sort of the conflict get out of control. So all of that, and of course, couples are very, you know, each couple comes with its own set of, you know, concerns and issues. So we designed this program to be very, not a cookbook type of program. It's really designed to be flexible so that each couple sort of gets what they need.
I don't mean this to sound too clinical, but I'm going to ask it. Who needs more help here? Is it the unwed dad or the unwed mom when it comes to figuring out how that dad can be part of a relationship for raising the young child?
Generally speaking, I would say that mothers often come with a little bit more communication skill. I hate to draw those stereotypes, but I think young women tend to be better communicators than young men. So it can be easier to work with couples sometimes just because of that sometimes the mother takes the lead a little bit in sort of helping to facilitate those communication skills. But again, you know, if that's the rule, there are so many exceptions to that rule. And sometimes, young men are very effective communicators, and sometimes sometimes the young woman is the one who's more challenged.
You talked earlier about how difficult it is for some young dads to feel comfortable even beginning that conversation. How did they get comfortable with you and your colleague researchers? Because it sounds to me like you were asking them to open up a box that maybe they haven't shared with anybody else in terms of their emotions and their attitudes and their fears about being a young parent.
Yeah, I mean that was one of the sort of great unknowns. How are we going to get these young men to talk, to get in, come in the first place, and talk to us? And so we did. You know, one of the decisions we made was to recruit young fathers through the pregnant women, the young women who were pregnant, because we didn't know where to find young fathers. I mean, it's not like they congregate anywhere. So we decided, okay, let's rely on their partners to help us recruit them. And that worked. And that continues to work pretty effectively.
So you won their trust by winning the trust of the moms, who could convince the dad, this guy isn't so bad, and he's not a narc. He's not going to go ahead and lock you up. The goal is to
drag them to the meeting. I don't know that they convinced them could have convinced them that we were okay. But we, you know, once we got them there, and we designed the research experience, the data collection experience, to be as warm and friendly as we could make it. And part of that had to do with really talking with them, asking a lot of open-ended questions, and making it clear to them that, A, we wanted the long story. We were really interested in their story. And, B, there were no right answers. We didn't have, you know, we had no expectations about what it is they were going to say. And we were asking them questions that I'm sure nobody else had asked them. Things, very simple things like, how are you feeling about becoming a father? Or, you know, what kind of father do you want to become? Or where did you learn, you know, about that? And these are things that I think nobody had asked them before, but they had not really necessarily asked themselves. So they got interested in the process, in what they were saying. And that was, in some ways, for us, like the most rewarding experience, to be sitting down and having these conversations that were meaningful conversations for them that they had not had before. And I think that got them to come back. Like we really wanted them to come back and continue to talk to us over the next couple of years. And so it was important for us to have that kind of connection with them.
It's so interesting that you and your colleagues have developed a model now for essentially having a flight plan here to teach other young couples how to communicate. How could you implement that on a broader scale? You interviewed a limited number of people for the book, but as we pointed out, 40% or more of parents aren't married when they have that kid. How could we take what you learned in terms of what might make these relationships better and make this more of a common occurrence rather than the exception?
I'm really glad you asked that question because this book does, to some extent, have a punchline to it, a plan at the end of it. We really deliberately, we wanted to not just say, oh my gosh, here's a big problem. You know, what do we do about it? We do say, yes, there, you know, sort of paternal disengagement, father disconnection is a problem. And we do think we have some thoughts about how we could address it on a larger scale. And what we end with in this book is this idea of father-inclusive care, father-inclusive prenatal care. So what we make a case for, make an argument for, is that fathers need obviously different types of prenatal care, but they need prenatal care just as much as mothers do, along the lines of helping them develop the skills, address their own personal challenges, deal with relationship difficulties that the couples may have so that they are able to make a positive transition to parenthood during this window of opportunity, this wonderful time, the prenatal period, when they are more open to receiving help and more optimistic about what the future might bring. So we believe that, and we're just in the beginning stages of testing this locally with a federally qualified community health center that we've talked into giving this whirl, where when fathers come in, or when mothers come in, actually, when pregnant women come in, you know, they're asked to bring their partner, and their partner is given an evaluation, and then, you know, it's, we would recommend you get this service or that service based on what they tell us, based on what they say to us about the challenges they have. And we really believe, we don't know that for sure that that's going to solve the problems of father disengagement, but we think it's a good enough idea, and we think there's enough evidence behind it that it's really worth giving it a shot.
So at some point, there may be a time where you look for additional funding to create these or make these services available to a broader part of the public.
Yes. Yeah, so I've had, over the course of, you know, the last 20-some years, a lot of grant funding for this work. And, you know, what happens is that we're able to provide these services when we have grant funding, and we're really interested in – now we're interested in systems change. So what we do want grant funding to study the process, to be able to – research is expensive when we want to study the process. But one of the things this clinic is willing to do is to try to figure out ways that the services themselves can be paid for through insurance – through Medicaid, because that's the only way that this will be sustainable in the long run. So we're very invested in not having the services themselves be grant funded, but the research be grant funded. And it's, we're really talking about systems change research at this point. That's the public health sort of perspective on this, and in addition to the clinical
side. Very exciting. And it all starts with the thesis of the book, which is there may be a way to go ahead and bring these couples together early on.
Right.
Paul, fascinating conversation. Love to have you back on after you are able to test this out and see in a broader sense of whether or not it might be a program that would indeed be funded, not just locally, but on a much broader basis.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Paul Florsheim, Professor of Community and Behavioral Health Promotion, our guest on this edition of UWM Today. Make sure that you check out his book, Lost and Found, Young Fathers in the Age of Unwed Parenthood, just coming out this spring. Paul, best of luck to you, and we'll again look forward to seeing you here on the program in the future. And listeners, thanks so much for spending some time with us today. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. I'm Tom Lujack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.